My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Thinking of popping the question? Diamonds Direct has an offer you can't miss. This month only, buy a natural diamond engagement ring of 1 carat plus and receive a free natural 1 carat diamond tennis bracelet valued at $2,000. Imagine giving her the ring of her dreams and her wedding gift all at once. No one provides education, selection, and value like Diamonds Direct. Your chance to get a free tennis bracelet from your friends at Diamonds Direct won't last long. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.
What's up? I'm Laura Carenti.
And I'm Alexa Kristen. Welcome back, Adlandia. It's been too long.
We have missed you so much. It's been more than a year, Alexa. The last time we were on the mic was early March 2019.
Last time we had mics in front of our faces, we were in Brooklyn with Panoply, and now we are over at iHeart Radio with our friends, our new producer, Ryan. He's amazing. He's in the fam. It's just great to be back. You know, over the last year, of course, Laura and I talk all the time, talk about what's happening in the industry, talk about what's happening in business, talk about what's happening in the world. And I think we felt like it was really important to come back and, you know, now more than ever, bring the outside in. And I think what's really important is this mindset and the way that we kind of push to pull, right? We push to pull from the outside.
I love that.
So we're going to push Adlandia to pull in new voices, new faces, new thoughts. Speaking of new friends, little sneak peek. Lisa Sherman from the Ad Council is going to be on the show later in the season. When we were on the show and recording with Lisa, we had a great idea kind of off mic with her to do something to really highlight what the industry can be doing kind of constantly to be thinking about purpose, giving back, nonprofit. And so we created kind of this special segment that we're going to be featuring on the show called
Goodlandia. And we'll be talking a little bit later in the show about the Goodlandia segment. For the month of October, we will be focused on getting out the vote. We're also going to be chatting later in the season with Ian Schaefer, co-founder and CEO of Kindred, talking about the intersection of purpose and profit. And we have a big partnership that we're announcing that brings you more of Adlandia off the mic, available every day. You can go and register now to our new digital zine with our partners at Newsstand at www.newsstand.com/ Newlandia. So Newlandia is going to be a curation of content from contributors around the industry. Go check that out. Register. It is free to join.
So excited about it. Maybe there'll be some merch drops. Maybe.
I think we're all in on the merch drops.
Yep. Done. And we'd like to take a minute to thank our partners over at Yieldmo for helping us bring back the show.
We'll be chatting with Yieldmo over the course of the next few episodes, talking about making attention actionable, something Alexa and I have talked about at length on the show. So we're excited to dig back in with them in a four-part mini-series coming to you soon. Thanks again to our launch partner, Yieldmo.
Yieldmo.
But that said, we have a big interview to get to.
We have a really special first episode, and we were really excited about it. Malcolm Gladwell. It was an amazing conversation. And I think, you know, what was really, for me, there are a couple of great points of clarity when he starts to talk about, and you guys will hear it, when he starts to talk about storytelling in such a simple way with no pretense. For me, I'm going to underscore the no pretense, because I feel like right now, you know, as marketers, as advertisers, we need to do the best work and just be focused on the best work with no pretense. None of the pomp and circumstance. Because that, a lot of that's been stripped away.
I couldn't agree more. I think is a real important reminder for brand marketers who are writing briefs and sitting in the rooms making decisions about what narratives get put out into the world. So I'm excited for everyone to hear this amazing first interview with Malcolm Gladwell.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
When it comes to ensuring your company has top-notch security practices, things can get complicated fast. Vanta automates compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more, saving you time and money. With Vanta, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vanta to build trust and prove security in real time. Listeners can claim a special offer of $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/special. That's vanta.com/special for $1,000 off Vanta.
Welcome back, Edlandia. We are so excited to welcome Malcolm Gladwell, New York Times bestselling author of books including The Tipping Point, Blink, Outliers, David and Goliath, and more, including most recently Talking to Strangers. Go pick that up. It's available now. Writer for The New Yorker, recognized as one of Time's 100 most influential people, podcast host of Revisionist History, one of my personal favorites, Broken Record, and also co-founder of Pushkin Industries. Malcolm, welcome to Atlantia.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Malcolm, we, you know, are huge fans of Revisionist History, and we love that, you know, Revisionist History is about the kind of story that was not told or the truth behind a person that wasn't recognized. And you're amazing at kind of pulling these stories and these characters out of history and retelling a story. What's the most unlikely kind of storyteller that you admire most in the past or present?
Unlikely?
Who's the unrecognized storyteller that you point to in your head?
That's a really good idea. Good question. Well, I suppose in your definition of unlikely, I read a lot of thrillers, spy stories, those kinds of things. And I tend to think that if you want to learn how to tell a story, that's where to look. And so, you know, I have read every Jack Reacher novel. I have read every Stephen Hunter novel. I have read every John le Carré novel. When I was a kid, I read every Agatha Christie novel. When I was even younger, I think I read every Hardy Boys book. You know, I've always thought that the principles of good storytelling are universal, and people in the world of fiction are probably a step ahead of those of us in the world of nonfiction. And that's where we ought to, you know, there's just questions about, a lot of it is about pacing. You know, storytelling is fundamentally, I think, a question of pacing, that things have to come at the right moment. If you rush it, it doesn't work. And if you are too slow, it doesn't work. And that's what novelists think about endlessly. And I don't know whether we in the nonfiction world pay enough attention to that particular problem.
Can we go a step further and talk about storytelling in the advertising world? I know a fun fact, Malcolm, that I learned about you recently is that you wanted to start out of school a career in advertising.
I did.
And so there must have been something about storytelling through the lens of advertising and marketing that intrigued you. How would you take what you just shared and apply that a step further to storytelling as it applies to brands?
Well, the reason I was obsessed, and I remain obsessed with advertising, and I did, you're quite right, coming out of college, what I really wanted to do was go and work for an ad agency. I applied to, I think, 16 agencies and got 16 rejections. So that's why I went into journalism, because I couldn't get a job with my first love. But what I admired was the economy of advertising. The idea that you can tell a story in a 30-second television commercial is to me so fantastic and unbelievable. And I always think people who do those ads are the greatest of all storytellers. You know, that famous line of Mark Twain's, "I wrote you a long letter because I didn't have time to write you a short one." And his point being, it's harder to tell a story briefly than at length, is so true. And the idea that there are television commercials that are 30 seconds long where you feel like you have entered into someone's experience and you feel like a story has been told from beginning to end in 30 seconds is just unbelievable to me. I mean, I don't think I could do it, which is why I'm in such awe of it. From time to time, I call up, if I see an ad I really love, on more than one occasion, I have tracked down the person responsible for it just to talk to them.
Can you tell us about a time when you did that?
Yeah, there was one very memorable one. There was a Heineken ad where there were a bunch of people, young people, in the back of a taxi cab. And the taxi driver, who's this crusty old guy, is playing I think it's a Belle Div DeVoe song. They all start singing along. It's this lovely moment because I think it's a guy and two girls, and they're clearly coming home from a night out in the town, and they're just a little bit tipsy, and they start singing along to that song, and then the taxi driver joins in, and he's like a 70-year-old angry-looking guy, and it's just so lovely. Like, everything about it is perfect, and I call it the guy, I was going to do something. I never ended up writing about it, but I just wanted to talk to the guy who did it and just say, like, I'm sorry, that's genius. Like, everything about it. And I just had him tell me how that ad came about and how it was filmed. And
I feel like we started a new show. Where
yeah, I think we just started a new show.
Malcolm can critique ads and or find out the origin story of them. If anybody's interested in making that show, call Pushkin.
There's a Google Chrome ad, too, that I never... Did I talk to the guy who did it, or did I talk to someone who knew the guy did it? I once, on Abbot Kinney in Venice, ran into somebody who said hello. It turns out he worked for an ad agency, and we started talking about our favorite ads, and I started talking about that Google Chrome ad where the father... If you're not crying 15 seconds into this one, you have no heart. It's unbelievable. It's the, she's gone to college and she's emailing with her dad, and they're, you don't realize until halfway in that her dad is all she has left. Mom has just died, and they're wondering about how they're missing the mom and wondering. And as the dad is typing about the mother and telling you the mother's died, all you see is his keystrokes, and his keystrokes slow down. And it's just like, at that moment, it is gut-wrenching.
Do you cry at ads? Do you cry?
Oh, my God, yeah. I totally cry. I mean, of course. I cry. You know, remember the legendary Hallmark ads? Yeah, I mean, I was in tears.
So the power of storytelling is obviously something that you've created, but it also clearly resonates with you. One of the things that we are curious to talk about is, as you're such a successful podcast host who has amassed an audience, I think you're something at 3 million downloads per episode of Revisionist History. You know, thinking, Malcolm, about what it takes to create or build an audience of that size, but then also integrate brands into the conversation in such a way where you don't skip a beat and that your audience is looking for the ads and or connects, you know, sort of the message, perhaps. How do you think about integrating ads? I know you had some that you've wanted to make over the years that never came to fruition, one of which you shared around ZipRecruiter and the St. Bernard. Can you talk to our audience about how they should think about engaging with you as a podcast host and, more importantly, connecting with your audience in a meaningful way?
Yeah. Well, I think of my audience as having a shared sensibility, not a shared demographic. And so I sort of know, I have an intuitive sense about why they're listening and why they're reading my book, which is I think they share the same kind of curiosity I have and the same sense of mischief. I don't take things that seriously. I mean, every now and again, but I don't take myself, you know, insanely serious. I mean, there's a kind of, I don't know, there's a certain personality to Revisionist History that, and I think that the people who listen are people who don't necessarily agree with me, but people who just have that, an appreciation for that personality. It's really my dad's personality. My father was someone who took like three things really seriously: mathematics, gardening, and the Bible, and nothing else. Everything else was up for grabs. He could be convinced, he could joke about it, he could make fun of himself. I mean, outside of those three realms, it just was, everything for him was a speculative exercise in enjoyment and curiosity. And I sort of am the same way. I have a couple of things that I'm passionate about, but the rest... And I think people who listen will share that. And so we're interested in, I think of ideas as things that are not just informative and interesting, but fun. I think it should be as fun to explore an idea as it is to watch a movie or listen to an incredible song or go for an amazing walk or whatever your choice of pleasure is. So when I do an ad, I love to write my own ads because I'm a frustrated copywriter. and the best ones are the ones where I just bring that sensibility.
So Malcolm, tell us a story about the St. Bernard.
Oh yeah, the St. Bernard. ZipRecruiter had a product they wanted to promote, which was a reverse. Instead of employers looking for employees, it was going to be potential employees would use ZipRecruiter to look for employers. And so I found this true story about a family like in the wilds of Minnesota who had a pet St. Bernard, and the St. Bernard got lost and they had to go out looking for the St. Bernard, which of course is, you know, St. Bernards historically are the ones who look for people lost in the snow, and their St. Bernard got lost in the snow. So it was the perfect, so the whole thing was about this St. Bernard who got lost, and it was this complicated, hilarious, I thought hilarious, perhaps not in real life, allegory for what ZipRecruiter was trying to do with their, but then sadly they decided they didn't want to promote that. And so this is like one of those, you know, in Soviet Russia, there would always be these legendary manuscripts that never saw the light of day. This is the legendary lost ZipRecruiter ad.
I think you're more of a creative director than you know, because every creative director experiences that pretty much every day with clients. Cutting room floor.
I want to do, if I ever did an ad show, I just want to play all those, the ones that never made it, I think are the fun ones. I want to hear all the ones that, I just think that would be hilarious.
You've talked a lot about your voice, and there's been a lot of, you know, folks who've written about your voice as a writer, as a storyteller. Was there a time when you realized you had galvanized your own voice in that perspective? Was there like a specific moment that you realized, or was it over time?
I mean, the first time I ever was starting the podcast, it was, you know, doing the podcast was the first time when I really had to use my voice, right?
Like literally, yes.
Literally use my voice. Mm-hmm. And I realized I have a different spoken sensibility, slightly different than written sensibility. At least my writing tends to be a lot more straightforward. There's still some playfulness there, but it's not as in person, in speech, I'm more playful than I am in writing. And so it was not until I formally was required to use my voice and tell stories this way that I began to realize, oh, you know, this is actually a side of myself that I really like and think is fun and that people will respond to.
What's it done for your storytelling? I mean, you've talked about this a bit, but if you feel like more expressive in audio, in voice, has it changed the way you tell the stories?
The thing about podcasts is you don't have to, you can meander a little bit in a way you can in print. And that suits me because I am a meanderer. There's tons of asides that I want to go on. Like in one of the podcast episodes that's coming up in season 5, we have this little moment where I'm talking about this painting. And this is a particular Van Gogh that in its long history was once owned by the heiress to the Kmart fortune who lived in Detroit. And what's hilarious about her life is that she was briefly for a year married to a Swedish baron. And she convinces him to move from London to Detroit. And the marriage lasts 6 months and he's out of there. Of course, it's Detroit in the 50s. What Swedish baron from London is going to survive a move to Detroit? So it's like that kind of thing. If you're writing about it, do you put that in? It's sort of hard because that story, that little digression requires a certain tone of voice, right? But in a podcast, of course you put it in because it's hilarious. So it's like, there's so much more playfulness inherently in. And that's the thing about the ads, too. The ads are just, it's just so much fun. There's so much you can do if you put your mind to it in that space when you incorporate ads into a podcast.
I was blown away by the subtle yet impactful insight you shared at a dinner not that long ago, Malcolm, when you talked audiobook sales surpassing print. I got stuck on it. And I'm still stuck on it because I think there's something that's so true how you can develop a relationship through spoken word versus written, but also just a sign of the times and how people are choosing to consume content. In so much that I believe you're going to be the first author to hit 1 million audiobook sales. Is that accurate?
I don't know whether I'm the first. I don't know how many Michelle Obama has sold, but I don't know. I don't imagine there are a ton of others. Yes.
Approaching 1 million audiobook sales. And that surpassing print for the first time was a sort of thing to think about, as I'm sure now you're thinking about format, in so much that you shared that you don't know that you might ever write a book again. So what does that signal to you in terms of the way people want to engage and they want to learn and interact with hosts and all the other things that it might point to?
Well, I mean, I should say that I don't think books are dead, far from it. This is, first of all, an indication of just my shifting interests, that I like this way of storytelling. I like working with groups. I mean, it's much more of a team exercise to do something in audio. I like how emotional audio is. That's what those are the kinds of stories I want to tell these days. I like how, you know, there will come a point when brands like Pushkin will clearly, we're going to be selling our audiobooks directly, right? At some point, there'll be no intermediary. I love that. The book business has, for obvious reasons, has all kinds of intermediary steps. You need printers and distributors and trucks and bookstores and, you know, on and on and on and on. I love the idea of finishing something on a Monday and sending it out to my audience on a Tuesday. That's kind of great. And boy, am I grateful in the middle of this pandemic that my audiobook is more popular than my physical book, because people aren't going to bookstores right now. You know, they can still order it online, but, you know, there's just something really powerful about the immediacy of this particular experience. And that appeals to me a lot at the moment as a storyteller.
At the end of, I believe it was season one of Revisionist History, Alexa and I went to see you do a live reading at the Apple Store in Soho. And I just remember the two of us sitting at the back watching. It was like being at a concert, standing room only. And, you know, everyone was leaning forward and couldn't wait to ask questions at the end. How do you think about sort of that two-way relationship that podcasting might allow you to have? Is it any different than when you would be doing a book tour? Do you find more in-between moments to engage during a season, and especially during the time of COVID? How are you engaging with your audience, and how do you imagine you will moving forward?
Well, it's a much more intimate relationship with the audience. The minute they can hear your voice. So if you think about this, to backtrack for a moment, the people who have the most intimate relationship with their audiences are people who are on television. So actors sometimes, although the actor thing is weird because the person is often relating to the actor through a character and not. When I think, you know, when I meet Jennifer Aniston, I'm not thinking about Jennifer Aniston. I'm thinking about her character on Friends, right? So there's a real intimacy when you hear someone in a consistent context, and they become a part of the furniture of your life. That weird thing where if you were to run into someone like that, you're not sure whether to call them by their first or last name because they seem like they're, now with an author, you don't have that. If you're writing a book, people don't think of you as a friend. They don't feel like they know you. They, you know, there's, you're sort of abstract. Podcasting is much closer to the first model. And so, you know, you people who come up to me now because of my podcast, they're approaching me not as a celebrity, but as a friend.
Yep. That's right.
It's really interesting. That's different. You never hear Mr. Gladwell, which I would hear in the book days. It's Mr. Gladwell. Could you sign my book? Now it's like Malcolm, blah, blah, blah. It's like, and the way they approach you is totally different. It's like the distance is gone. It's like, not in an obnoxious way. It's actually lovely. It's like, it's just like they feel like they've been having a conversation with me and they want to continue the conversation.
Yeah.
And that's powerful stuff. That's amazing, right? That's the gold standard. That, you know, if you're interested in building, I really have a sense now that I am actively building an audience. There's a community of people out there who are waiting for the next episode and who are, you know, who just kind of, to use a 60s expression, who like dig what's, who dig revisionist history, right? It's like, that's kind of great. I like that.
We were doing some research before this, and book sales for some of your earlier books, like The Tipping Point, reached 2 million book sales worldwide. It's interesting to think about each episode reaches 3 million and sort of carrying that audience along. As you noted, you're going into, you said season 5, just how incredible it is to build that audience over time. And you've used this phrase in a previous conversation of the idea of having loyalty over novelty, which I think we're going to put on a t-shirt. because it's, we love that.
It's something that we would talk to brands and media companies about all the time, which was stop going for the kind of lowest common denominator. Make it valuable to make it valuable to someone. And the minute you do that, you start to differentiate yourself. I think especially right now, the world is kind of grappling with that. Like, how do they proceed, especially kind of post-COVID? Like, what is meaningful? How do we kind of proceed to be ourselves? Which is a kind of interesting question. I don't know if you have thoughts.
Yeah, no, it's this loyalty novelty thing has a number of different interesting dimensions. But one is that loyalty is a conversation and novelty is a monologue.
Whoa. Did you just hear what Malcolm said? Ryan, let's rewind that. We got to hear it again.
Loyalty is a conversation and novelty is a monologue. And so I think that applies both to people like me and also to brands, that if you want loyalty, you have to find a way to have a conversation with those who you're. So to give you an example, we just got them as an advertiser, actually, because I'm so in love with the brand. I'm a runner, and there's this new sportswear brand called Tracksmith, which is like the cool running brand. And the stuff is really, really, I wear it like all the time. I met the guy who found the company. I mean, I'm in the tank for this company, I'll be honest with you. As are a lot of runners I know. It's just beautiful stuff made for runners by runners. And the reason that brand connects to me is I feel like it's a conversation, not a literal conversation, but I feel like when I look at the way the stuff they're putting out changes over time, it's almost as if they're like responding to what runners like me want. That they're, you know, it's people like me making stuff for people like me. I don't know. So that strikes me. That's loyalty in action. You know, my suspicion is I'll be wearing that brand 10 years from now. I really do believe that.
But if brands were thinking the way you're talking about things and giving themselves license to actually grow and not just grow the bottom line, but grow the relationship in a meaningful way, I think we would see very different work, very different products. David and Goliath hit me in a very different way. And one of the things that you said, I actually think it's in your promo for Masterclass, was why do giants lose, right? Because they become so big and so powerful that they actually lose the ability to see. And that Goliath literally and physically lost his ability to see. Mm-hmm. We're in this really interesting era. If I take that into the media world and the consumer world, where the ad dollars are dominated by a couple of players, right? And they're sitting on reams of data and analytics about us, about our behaviors, about everything, right? How we live, where we live, all that stuff. But does that really actually help them in the long run? There's something that's a bigger question here, that if they want to have this discourse, if they want to have that relationship, you know, do they get to the place where they're too big to see, even though they've got all of the information to see?
Yeah.
What do you think about that? What's the future with where all this consolidation is making the Goliath?
I think about this a lot I'm a car nut. I spend huge amounts of every day on car websites. And the stereotypical obvious example of this is General Motors. And General Motors is it's interesting in a number of ways, because as a car fanatic, I am aware of the fact, as are all car fanatics, that General Motors makes really good cars and has now for the last 10, 15 years. At least 4 or 5 of their cars are world-class automobiles, which is, for a car manufacturer, given the constraints they're under with their legacy costs, is really high. And I just think, how on earth can a company that probably spends, what, $2, $3 billion a year on advertising, so that's over the last 10 years, $25 to $30 billion in communicating with largely the American public, has been unable to communicate the fact that they make really good cars. There must be many explanations for that. But one is that it must be just something about size. I mean, there's something about, I mean, I look at their advertising, I don't, I don't want to step on anyone's toes, but there's nothing particularly compelling about it.
Right.
It certainly doesn't communicate the idea that they make really good cars, you know, which is kind of shocking. Like, you know, a really obvious example, forgive me while I riff on this, you know, the Chevy Bolt, previously the Volt, is one of the best
electric cars. Yes.
Made in the world.
Yes.
And has been for, I mean, it is a gold standard EV.
Yes.
How is it that nobody knows that fact? How is it that nobody knows that dollar for dollar, the Corvette right now is probably the greatest sports car made in the world? Or that the Chevy SS is a car that every single car nut in America would die to own a Chevy SS if they could find one? Or, you know, I could go on. Like, I don't understand. I just don't. This baffles me. It totally baffles me.
Do you think
me.
It's because we, when you look at like an advertising brief, and I'm curious to think about like, are there book briefs, right? Like when you go and you think about telling a story, right? And you come up with an idea for what that's going to be. Do you start with what the objective is and how many books you need to sell and what you hope the output is on the other side of that narrative? Or do you go into writing a story or a book or creating an episode of revisionist history because there's a conversation you want to have with people?
Yeah, a connection you're trying to make.
That's where the disconnect, I think, between, because I've heard you say this, Malcolm, and we've said it many times on this show, people don't hate ads. They hate bad ads. And does that all begin further upstream in the brief where you're more focused on the transactional outcome than the relationship with the people who are transacting?
Yeah, no, I think you're up. I mean, you would know way better than me, but I think you're right. There is some kind of fundamental, there's something, I don't know what the institutional process is that is causing this gulf between the audience and the product.
Yeah.
But you're right. When I sit down and do an episode, I write a book or do an episode of Revisionist History, I don't start with my expectations of how many downloads we're going to shift. Right. It didn't even occur to me. I just think about what's an interesting story to tell. And I have faith that if I tell it in a compelling way, people will gravitate towards it. I don't even know what the downloads are. I mean, I don't care less. It's not my problem. You know, my problem is to tell great stories.
Jacob Weisberg, your business partner, would want me to say 3 million downloads per episode.
Plus. Yeah, plus. Let's add the plus.
But can we stick on that for a second? How do you know when you've landed on a book-ready idea?
If you had tried to figure out ahead of time, you never would do it. And those are the hair-raising ones because, you know, you commit a lot of time and investment in something without knowing whether it's going to pan out. And, you know, I did this in this upcoming season. We have a 4-part series on this Air Force general called Curtis LeMay. It was originally one episode. Then it became 2. Then it became 3. Then it became 4. And just because I got into it and realized, oh, there's another side to this. And, oh, wait a minute. I don't think about this guy the same way now that I did a month ago. I was constantly updating and revising and adding to my understanding, and that turned out, now that's the heart of the season. That was not something I could have in January. I would have said something completely different, and that's curiosity, just being agnostic to where the story takes you.
So, Malcolm, what is your kill by DIY? What would you kill in the world? What would you purchase, acquire, and what would you do yourself?
Anything. You're talking about anything.
Anything.
So what would I...
What would you get rid of? If you could strike from existing on the earth, what would it be?
Oh, God, so many things. Golf, I get rid of, so that all golf courses could be converted to running... course, they're perfect for running on.
I don't think that's what I'll kill. Like that.
I'll kill golf. What's the next one? What would I acquire?
What would you buy?
You buy?
What I would buy would be probably a car of some kind. I think I would buy, I would love to own a, I mean, you mean anything?
Anything.
Unlimited budget.
Unlimited.
Unlimited budget. Oh, then I would buy a BMW Z8, which is a no longer hasn't been made. You know, the last one was made, I think, in probably 2006, 2007. One of the world's most gorgeous sports cars. They're new, like they're 150 grand. So a little rich for my taste at the moment. But if this game is writing me, is giving me a blank check, I'm getting a Z8. And then the last one is
what would you do yourself?
Do myself.
Yeah. So what would you create, make? Nothing you've done before.
Well, I'd like to, I can't do it, but if I were not a journalist, I would, another one of the things I would have always loved to be was a developer. I would like to build something like a house. My brother is a very handy. If my DIY would be, I would ship my brother down to where I am and we would build the loveliest little, you know, small, gorgeous cottage, which would serve as a whatever office, guest room,
recording studio,
guest house, whatever, recording studio, whatever. But that's what I would build something really small and really beautiful tucked into the woods.
Amazing.
Love it. Malcolm, thank you.
This was amazing.
So fun.
Yes, so much fun.
You're welcome back anytime. And if people want to get in touch with you to do host reads, how can they get in touch with you?
They should get in touch with Heather Fain. Go to the pushkin.fm website and email our director of marketing, Heather Fain, and she will line it all up.
Love it.
Malcolm, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
What a first episode. Did we just drop the mic here? Was that the whole season in one take?
I'm joining Malcolm Gladwell, Agency RS.
Can we just talk about that mic drop in the middle of the conversation that is definitely going on some merch?
Yeah, it's definitely going on some merch. Loyalty is a conversation. Novelty is a monologue. I think that's probably one of the things that the industry needs to think about the most when we're chasing, right, the cheap and chasing something that's cute. And chasing something that's just an eyeball. Everyone wants to have this deep relationship with their customer. Everyone wants to actually make their brand mean something. No one wants to have a brand that is fair weather, that is shallow. Everyone wants to build something. So we actually have to go build it. We actually have to go put the energy into it.
Well, when you think about starting with the outcomes before we even get to the thing we're talking about, we already know what we wanted to do before we even have an idea.
Yeah, I love, he actually talks about this. He said, I don't know what is happening in the industry or in the institutional process that there's a gulf between the audience and the product. And we're actually creating it because that gulf actually doesn't exist. So when we're in our process of briefing, to your point, we're actually going for the KPI and the outcome and that instead of the relationship.
Right.
And by that, you've already failed.
And the reality of what he said is like, I don't think about 3 million plus downloads per episode before I think about the idea. I'm not even thinking about it at all. A great idea, a great story will deliver.
But it's the truth. Because at the end of the day, making good and being able to discern what good is, that's kind of all it's about.
And speaking of good, I think it's time for Goodlandia.
Goodlandia.
So in our first ever Goodlandia, we wanted to partner with the Ad Council to really highlight and support initiatives that are moving our industry and society forward.
So for this month of October, we're going to be totally focused on voting. Make sure you have a plan to vote.
So speaking of having a plan, the Ad Council developed a campaign in partnership with Viacom CBS called Vote for Your Life. It makes it easy for potential voters to register to vote and make a plan to vote early. If you want to vote by mail, or if you prefer to drop your ballot off in person at a local drop box or county election office, time is running out. The election is just weeks away, November 3rd. So request a ballot in time to be counted. Don't wait. Go to voteforyourlife.com and make sure you vote. This is a message from Goodlandia. So, what an episode. First episode. So many new people to thank at iHeart. first and foremost, want to thank our producer, new on the mic with us, Ryan Martz. Thank you so much, Ryan.
Why don't you give them a little hello with that velvety voice?
Little hello.
Little hello. Perfect. Ryan Martz on the mic. Laura, hit it with the list of all of our friends and family at iHeart who have been so good to us and helped us get back on air.
Big thank you to Bob, Connell, Carter, Andy, Eric, Gail, Val, Michael, Jen. We appreciate you. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
And speaking of family, to the Adlandia family, we are so happy to be back. Thank you for all the love, all the messages, all the when are you coming back? We are back. So tell your friends, tell your family.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Diamonds Direct has done it again. This month only, get ready for an offer you can't resist. Buy a natural diamond engagement ring of 1 carat plus and receive a free natural 1 carat diamond tennis bracelet valued at $2,000. That's right, a stunning diamond tennis bracelet at no extra cost. Imagine giving her the ring of her dreams and her wedding gift all at once. So hurry into Diamonds Direct. Your chance to get a free tennis bracelet will not last long. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.